Marto, Ed and Robin, lifting podcasting to new heights. Well, they're giving it a crack. Might need a hand from Height for Hire's reliable fleet of booms and scissor lifts. 1-800-heightforhire.com.au.
Now, we have a lot of animal chats on this show, and you two both had a dog behaviour question off air, and we thought, why not get someone on? Why not get an expert on that can tell us about the behaviour of dogs, and then keep them on the line, and then we can have our listeners come in and get their questions answered. So we say hello to Laura, who is Australia's leading dog behaviourist. Laura, how do I say your last name?
It's a good, honest Greek name, buddy. It's Visceritis, or you can say V, whichever one's easier.
Laura V, your new book is called Dognitive Therapy. I love this. You're a dog behaviorist. I'm so nice to have you with us. Now, Marto and Robin both have dog behavior questions, do you not?
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go.
And we should say 133353. If you have a question that you would like to ask a dog behavioralist, then Laura is here ready
to
for you.
To see what she said, I'm just flicking through your book. It's often about the humans, not the dog.
I know, that's where we have to make that confession of dog training is really not about dogs. When I work with people and dogs, I spent most of my time talking to the people and spending very, very little time with the dogs, unfortunately, guys. So hopefully I can help you.
Okay, that's good. And ask about Teddy.
All right, I've got a five-month-old Kelpie. We own a fairly decent-sized yard, so I thought it would be okay. But early on, you know, when Ted was about 6 or 7 weeks old, I was so amazed that when I'd throw a ball, he'd bring it back. I went, wow, this is amazing. But now it's 5 months old. This is the only thing occupying our dog's mind from the moment the first human makes contact with him in the morning until he gets locked out and goes to bed at night time. There is a ball consistently. Every single second of the day, he has a ball in his mouth dropping it at anyone's feet.
Oh, isn't it? Well, I mean, you've got a working dog there that, you know, herds and chases and runs.
Yes, we know.
And I'm not telling you anything new, but you know what? Kelpies can run like 40, 50 Ks a day.
They need
to be busy all the time. The hard way as well.
But how do we stop him doing it all the time?
Well, the best thing to do is to have a timeout and give him another opportunity to do something else. So what we tend to do is find something else that your dog loves, and often it's food. And what I say to people is get rid of your dog bowl. It's one big, free, useless five-second treat.
Oh.
And use what you would give them during the day as an opportunity to train them to do something. So if you're sitting down watching TV during the ad break, spend 2 minutes teaching your dog to do a new trick. Get your dog to use their brain and get them engaged in something exciting. And, you know, that will reduce that ball obsession because they'll be thinking about focusing on something different. So I often tell people, get rid of the dog bowl. Use that food as opportunities for them to use their brain throughout the day instead.
Beautiful.
That's a great one. All right, Laura, straight away. That's a great one.
Robin's troubled as well, Laura. Come on.
Okay, just quickly. I have a greyhound and I also have a New Zealand Hunterway Cross Doberman. They're very attached to each other. The greyhound isn't very well and I don't think she'll be long for this world. What will happen when she goes to the other dog?
You know what? I think dogs definitely do experience grief and loss. A lot of this, though, really depends on you and how you behave and the way you respond to that. So when that time comes, and I'm so sorry that, you know, that time is coming, it's really important that you maintain strength and focus on a positive routine for your next dog. And then maybe one day in the future, you and your dog can go to a rescue group and let them choose another friend. Often when our dog meets another dog to live with, it's really important that they meet them first and that they're involved in choosing that dog to come back to your family home. Because that's a much better chance that they'll have a really strong friendship like yours too, as well.
That's a great idea. Laura, that's an excellent one. Okay, here we go. Laura V, Australia's leading dog behaviourist, is on the line. This is your chance. If you've got a question about some of the behaviour that your dog is showing, this is your chance to get Laura to give you some advice.
And this is Gazza of Turinga. Morning, Gazza.
G'day, Robin. How are you travelling?
Say hello to Laura and ask her your question, Gaz.
Yeah, g'day Laura V. I've got a 9-month-old Labrador puppy. During the day, she's very placid, just chills out. But then at about 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night time, it's like she's sculled 27 cans of Red Bull. She goes absolutely nuts. She kind of bucks around like a bronco.
Wow.
She's bouncing off the couches. Her eyes get really big, like her pupils like expand real big. And she's just an absolute maniac, growls and barks and goes absolutely nuts. So love your advice on this one.
Does her head start spinning as well? So their head starts spinning as well, or that? Look, there could be a few things going on, Gaz. One thing I would definitely recommend is you take your dog to the vet just to make sure all is good on the inside. And then assuming that's all good, what often happens around that time at night is when it becomes dark, and dogs see the world very differently in the dark to what we do. That's when possums and foxes and rats and all sorts of creatures and noises start to become available. And that's where they kind of go into a little bit of a frenzy. So assuming your dog is all healthy, and I'm very, very sure that they are, what we would do is we would use that opportunity to teach them to do a few things. So keep your dog's brain active. Most of the time your dog goes absolutely mental or becomes destructive or drives you crazy because they just don't have enough to focus on, and so they're finding something themselves to focus on. So bring it back to you. You know, really, really basic stuff for a nine-month-old puppy. You've really got to teach them self-control and all sorts of things like that. And I write about that in my book. So you can definitely get some help in that as well.
Good on you, Gaz.
Should we, just before you go, we give her a Kong with peanut butter in it. Is that a good idea to distract her? Is that the kind of things you're talking about?
Best idea ever. Yeah. So if you can get your dog to think for themselves in a positive way, so chuck it in a treat dispenser. Don't, as I said before, get rid of the food bowl. Throw your food out in the backyard for them to forage for. Oh. Games like, maybe 6:30 becomes a time in which you teach your dog to sit and stay, and you go and hide their favourite toy in another room and get them to go and search for it. So all
Laura,
those lots of really fun games are really awesome. Yeah.
All the dogs, and there's four and out, two or three houses around our area, they all go crazy at the same time. It's definitely 100% possums.
Okay.
I reckon.
Great advice.
Thanks, Gazza. Let's go to Charlene of Woody Point. What's your question, Charlene?
Hi, Laura. I've got a 10-year-old miniature pincer who's quite a sensitive little girl.
I can imagine.
I'm pregnant and I'm due to give birth any day now. So she's been showing some nervous behaviour, like digging holes that, she just never does, things like that. But part of my question is she sensing something's happening? Like, I know she knows she's lost her lap to sit on and stuff like that. but, lots of people say, dogs are so sensitive. They know something's happening, and then the other thing is just some tips for introducing the baby to her.
Yeah. So what's your dog's name?
Storm.
Storm. So Storm totally knows what's going on. And even the little things that you are experiencing, all those emotional and physical changes for you over the past, 8 or so months, she's aware of as well. So even though she can't have your lap and perhaps she doesn't have as much time with you in certain ways, what you can do is create a routine that's positive in other ways. So if she can't sit on your lap, then she can sit beside you on the couch and she gets lots and lots of treats for that.
So sometimes when your
dog's really sensitive and experiencing change, integrate food and the things that they really love and sort of join that with the things that make them feel anxious. So when you bring your baby home, or when, you send the clothes home for your dog to smell first, or when they first hear those cries, your dog gets heaps and heaps of really yummy treats. And when I say yummy treats, I mean like the most expensive roast chicken and salmon, stuff like that, because really good food becomes a really positive association with whatever, you're joining that to. So be mindful of what your dog wants at that time. Good luck. All the best with your baby.
Good on you.
Thanks, Charlene.
Talking to you, Charlene.
Hey, time for one more with Jack? Jack from North Lakes.
No, we'll do Jack now. Yeah.
I'll do Jack now. Okay, Jack, one more. Okay, Jack, you're on with Laura V, Australia's leading dog behaviourist. Her book is called Dognitive Therapy for Anyone Who Can't Get Through. But Jack, you're very lucky. You're going to be the last cab off the rank, buddy. What is your dog and what is its problem?
Hey, guys, just wondering. We've got a border collie cross, Chelsea, and she's a girl, and we've also got a boy. But every time we go to take him for a walk, he's fine, but he's just like, yeah, g'day, Dad, we're going for a walk. But she drops to the ground and then urinates. We're a bit confused because the vet's like very, no, it's okay. Her health checks are fine, but we don't hit her, we don't do anything. She gets all the cuddles in the world because she's a bit of a softie, but... Yeah, we're just what's going on.
Did you rescue her, or have you had her since the pup?
We took her off somebody, but she's only a puppy. She's probably just over one. But we took her off a we took her off a very caring family, so to be, I guess.
Yeah. And you know what? She may not have had a bad experience with just her. She sounds like a super sensitive soul and what we would call very submissive or appeasing. So when she gets really excitable, she probably wets her pants and things like that. And that does happen with lots of different dogs. You guys are rolling your eyes at me right now, I know.
Oh, no, no.
But there's two things I would love you to do. The first one is when it's time to go for a walk, don't make a fuss. Don't talk to them. Don't look at them. Don't do anything until they're completely calm. That's when you chuck the lead on your dog, okay? Because what's happening is there's some excitability there, and the more excited your dog is, the more likely they're going to do those behaviours. The second one is you can go to your vet and get what's called a DAP diffuser. It's a thing that you can plug into the wall, or you can even get it as a collar, and it releases this smell that's really, really relaxing for dogs. And sometimes dogs that are really sensitive or can get anxious find that smell really, really relieving. It helps them to calm down. So give those two things a crack.
Oh, good one.
That is fantastic. Laura V, we're going to have to do this again.
Yeah, you're coming back, Laura. You're awesome.
Oh, totally. I'd love to, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Do I have to pay you for staying?
No, it's all right.
Thank you so much.
Dognitive Therapy is the name of the book. Now, listen, I'm sorry, there was a couple of other calls, Robin, that we couldn't get to, Jason. Yep. Also, a young man by the name of Mitchell Pierce wanted to ring in. Apparently, there's a really sexy shih tzu that won't text him back, but we don't have time, Mitchell. We might have to get to you a little bit. You'd like to talk about Mitchell and his experiences. I wouldn't do that, Laura.
You can't make people love you. Sorry, no. Mitchell.
That's there. Sorry, Mitchell. She's just not that into you. That's the way it is, buddy.
And everyone went to air this morning, the three calls. Let's all get a copy of your book, Dognitive Therapy. Right. So thanks, Laura. You're fabulous.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. Have a top day.
Watched the Socceroos last night, Ed.
Go, you Socceroos.
How good were they?
Lucky. We're lucky. Well, not lucky. We got the win 3-2 over Saudi Arabia, which puts us, didn't change our position on the ladder, but it means we're now equal on points with Japan and Saudi Arabia. The way, if everyone's thinking, who cares, this is to get to the World Cup.
That's big.
Two teams go straight through, one team, but the third team goes into a playoff. And this means that we're now, if we keep basically win all of our home games, we should make it. But we did. It was good. It was a good win.
We were crappy in the first half, though.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Look, it wasn't great, but yeah, we won, and that's what matters. But the thing that everyone's talking about today, or probably will be talking about, is at the start of the game. They had a minute. It was in Adelaide, and they had a minute silence for the Australian victims of the most recent terror attack in the UK. Or is a minute silence, and all the Australian team did what they always do, which is, even if it's their minute silence, sorry, you guys can take
okay, I'll continue. Basically, this is how the commentators talked about it.
We stop to remember all the lives lost, all those families and friends affected by this terrible tragedy, and in particular, we reflect on the loss of two young Australian women living and working in London.
That was the guy in the PA, and then bang, for a minute, well, it was almost a minute silence. The Australians were arm in arm, lined up together, looking across on their, from their side of halfway across at the Saudis, who were doing their best impersonation of Brown's cows and just wandering around.
Which I thought was really rude.
To who?
To Australia, to the fact that we've taken a moment in our own country, in our space, and like, okay, if you don't want to be a part of it, but just stand still. Like, you don't have to be in solidarity like the Australian teams were. Yeah. But, you know, the announcer said they're recognising Australians who've lost their lives. That alone, forget all the political stuff, forget what religion those people were, just stop and be respectful of human life. It really upset me.
Do you reckon it was a female thing?
I don't know. Obviously, it didn't upset you.
The religion of Islam doesn't have much respect for females.
Yeah, that's. I don't think this for me. The offence from me for last night had nothing to do with the religion.
Well, you sound like one of the keyboard warriors who got busy.
No.
And they had all their ammunition and they started firing it up, going, "Oh, this is terrible." But did you realise? See, I find out this morning that the Saudis had said yesterday, this isn't part of our tradition, our cultural traditions, and we're not going to stop down and do this, I'm sorry, before the game. So it was no surprise.
So this is what they said. The Saudi team said that they had been advised by the officials that this tradition was not in keeping with Saudi culture. Mm. Who cares? You're a guest in, it's part of the AFC, which is the Asian Football,
What would they do this?
That's what, to make a point, mate, to make some point in their own minds that they maintained whatever it is that they were maintaining
for no good reason. Listen to this. It's not in keeping. This is their quote. It's not in keeping with Saudi culture. And they would move to their side of the field and respect our custom taking their own positions on the field.
Well, so that's rude.
It's a minute of your life.
Yeah, really.
And but this is what Saudis are like. If anyone knows Saudis, I've spent a bit of time in Bahrain when I was younger. Yeah. Oh, mate. They are some of the most spoiled people. They're a kingdom. They think they are the greatest people on earth.
What would have happened?
So spoiled.
If we had gone, if we were in Saudi Arabia,
oh my God,
and they had lost some people to whatever it was, and we didn't respect whatever custom it was that they had put in, what would have happened?
Their
there?
Secret police would make people would disappear, like I was proposing the other day. I know.
So now have you switched sides? Do you now think it was rude of them?
Their captain was.
It was, yeah. I've got no doubts, but I'm now. When I read that, I went, well, they told everyone. But the fact is, you know, Mohammed rang Triple M, you know, early this morning.
Yeah,
like
we've been playing it on our news.
On
this
our
morning.
News, righto. And he said, no, that's not right. We're supposed to, our book, the Quran, says that when you're in another country, you're supposed to obey their traditions.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
That's
I didn't even know.
Is that true?
I don't even know if it's a religious thing or not. All I know is that their captain as well, and he was stretching, he was jogging on the spot.
Oh, it's so
spot,
rude.
And that's
it's so
on purpose.
Damn rude.
Sorry, but that's on purpose.
I didn't see the national anthems. Were they both lined up for the national anthems?
Of course they were. The other team, the Saudis, some of the other players were standing still with their arms behind their backs, and they were clearly observing it. Yes, they were standing in their position. They were observing it. But the captain was jogging up and down, stretching. That's someone. He's the captain of the team. He knows that this has taken place. They've obviously had a conversation. So that's him saying, you know what?
I don't care.
I'm better
you.
Than this. I don't care I don't care about you, your culture, anything else, who died. I'm better than you, and this is what I'm going to do.
So my question is this. If the organisers knew that the Saudis weren't going to be a part of what we were choosing to do, would it have been better to do the minute silence for the Australians and the crowd and not have the Saudis come out and then do all the other stuff?
That's
because the problem now is we're discussing this as a snub and it then becomes about a culture of people or a religion or, it becomes this much bigger picture.
No,
whereas if we just circumnavigate.
No, it's good. It's good because it showed us who they are.
I'm making it about
that's
the country. Saudis have never taken any of these Muslim refugees that have crossed Europe. No one ever's allowed. You're not allowed into Saudi. And they're the same religion. That says more about Saudis than anything else.
Yeah, you know,
do your own homework.
Wasn't good. Have we been conned by one of the great marketing spins of the last 20 years or 15 years? The demonization of white bread. About how there's so many different types of bread that have come out because white bread, Marto and Robin, was shown to be or told to us that it was very bad for us, unhealthy.
Yep.
Then a story came out that there'd been a long study done by some British scientists that said, hang on a sec, maybe it's not. So what we thought we'd do is immediately go to you guys, because there's so many of your experts out there that have worked in and around the production of bread, to say, does anything weird go into white bread, sugar or whatever it is, to make it worse? This is what you had to say.
If this news is true about white bread being good for you, it's almost like someone with a life sentence getting new evidence, and they're all out of jail now.
25 years ago, I worked in a flour mill. Everything is white flour. To mill flour, the bran is the actual outside of the wheat. The actual white part's inside, so it gets milled out. And then later on, once they've dried all the flour, all the stuff gets added back in.
Yeah, every single dough is based on white flour.
What's
your wholemeal is pretty well just as much a white bread as your actual white bread. They've just added extra husk.
But there must be sugar in white bread, is there, or something?
No sugar at all. Just salt, yeast, flour and oil.
Well, those were your thoughts on white bread yesterday. It's in the Courier Mail again today with the word on the street. But let's go to someone who knows about nutrition, so much so it's their career, a nutritionist, Kate De Prima. Good morning to you. You know, you're based in Paddington. We're talking about white bread as a nutritionist. White bread, yes or no?
Look, you know, it's just bread, and it's not the actual bread. It's what you put on it. And I think we get all super excited and up in arms about white, wholemeal, multigrain. Look, I've got families and mums and dads who come to me and say, look, my children won't eat anything unless it's on white bread. But if you throw some ham, chicken, bit of salad in there, it turns that white bread into a healthy sandwich.
Okay, but we have for years thought that white bread was, you know, the devil incarnate. Are you telling me it's not, or you're just saying let's forget it and put good stuff on it so they'll eat something?
Look, you know, I often say to a mum or a dad, if you peel an apple, do you chuck it away? Does it become like the devil incarnate? No, it's still got some health properties. You've just taken a lot of the fibre away, which is the outside of the skin. It's kind of white bread versus the multigrain bread. And look, I've been doing this for 24 years. I've got a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I don't sweat it over the actual bread. My issue, I guess, is more the amount people eat. And I've got, like, lots of fussy eaters that come and see me in my clinic. And, you know, they'll have the white bread Vegemite sandwich for breakfast, lunch and dinner. And that's when we get into trouble. So, yeah,
that's true.
You know,
So there's not sugar. It's not to be avoided, like we have been told forever. It is not to be avoided at all costs. It is acceptable to eat white bread, which I've brought up two children the whole time, never buying anything but. And they're pretty healthy. Well,
look, they're pretty healthy. With a name like De Prima, I'm sure, you know, the pane de casa, that is as white as it comes. And it's really, look, it's about personal preference. It's about taste. But, you know, if you're going to have just white bread with a bit of butter, there's not a lot of nourishment in there. There's
true.
A little bit
that's
of fibre. But, you know, throw some hummus on it, throw some cheese, you know, throw some ham, throw some chicken.
But if you'd had brown bread with a bit of butter, would it be any different?
Look, you're going to have more fibre. You are. Look, there's no doubt about it. And some of those more gourmet breads, which, you know, I comb the markets and there's some pumpkin and chia and I think, you know, there's some new seeds that are landing on the market. And some of them, are, you know, it's just beautiful taste. And the more seeds, the more unrefined it becomes. Yes, absolutely the quality goes up. But, you know, we're not going to start throwing, you know, white breads in the bin and adding to sort of landfill just because it's white. I don't see the issue.
Well done. Kate De Prima, nutritionist, APD on Facebook, based in Paddington. Thank you so much for talking to us today. We'll be back next week to see if the white donuts are healthier than the ones with the chocolate icing on them. So be ready for that. Thank you, Kate.
Don't push it.
What a story. It's on the front page. It's on page 4 and 5 of the Courier Mail. Chinese takeaway, they're now calling the Pasali drama with the... Is it drama? What is it? When Paul Pasali was found by federal police, a dog sniffed him a few weeks ago at the Melbourne airport with $10,000, owed $50,000 on him, and all of a sudden he resigns on Monday. An interesting case.
And within the first paragraph on the front page of the Courier Mail, it says he was given to him via a Chinese fugitive. Doesn't it just get interesting when you say things like that?
Yeah, it gets really interesting. And the man who knows more about this story than we do is Channel 9's Joel Dry, who's been following the story from the start. Good morning, Joel. These latest developments are quite incredible.
Good morning, guys. They are fascinating, aren't they? It's much more like a crime novel or something like that, more so than your average day in Ipswich. But the now former mayor seems to have found himself in a fairly intriguing story that involves high-profile Brisbane barristers and Chinese fugitives, if you believe the story.
Okay.
Do we believe the story?
Yeah.
Well, there's some statutory declarations that have been signed, and as yet there is no criminal charges against anyone. So on face value, you perhaps can read into it what they say has happened. But basically, Paul Pasali is at the moment an unwitting participant in an illegal settlement. There's a barrister by the name of Sam DiCarlo. He's quite well known in the legal fraternity. He's represented some people in some very high-profile murder trials. He's also found himself in a bit of hot water where he's been almost charged with contempt of court. But he is a very good friend of Paul Pasali. They're both of Sicilian background, so they share some commonalities.
One of my mates is Sicilian, and there's one thing you need to know, they never forget. So be careful what everyone says here.
This is on the record. It is a fact. They are both of Sicilian background. But he claims, Sam DiCarlo claims, that he called up his mate Paul Pasali and said, can you do an old mate a favour and just collect some documentation for me from Melbourne and bring it back to Brisbane? Paul Pasali said, sure, no worries. He gets a package delivered to him on the night of May 12th. He looks at it and opens it up and says, geez, this isn't just your regular documentation. It's 50 large. He calls up Sam and says, what's going on? Sam said, no problems. It's just part of a legal settlement. I'm representing a Chinese client who's got himself into a bit of a bother over a gambling debt, and I just need you to bring it back for me.
Gambling just get involved in this too.
Gambling gets involved. He then gets pinched at the airport by AFP officers. The money is seized. It remains seized because there has been suspicion that it is the proceeds of crime. And that's when the trouble begins for Paul Pasali. He then calls quits on his mayoral career earlier this week, and all this media starts to follow him.
and the story seems to have a lot of holes in it. The Legal Society called a press conference yesterday, and they said, we have some great concerns that this is the behaviour of a barrister. We don't think it's necessary for a barrister to be dealing with money, nor should they be dealing with money. So they have concerns. And so it all just gets deeper and deeper.
Oh, this is lovely.
I mean, I can't remember the last time I had 50 large in my bag, Joel, to settle a gambling debt.
How high would that be? 500 $100 notes, they're saying. How high?
It wouldn't it be as impressive as you want it to be?
Oh, yeah.
So that's right. I had this chat with someone. As much as you want to think it's a briefcase where you pop the locks of the briefcase,
like in the movies.
It's just wall to wall, it's not that much. However, it is enough cash to be able to be detected by a sniffer dog whose job it is to sniff out large amounts of cash.
Joel, what's going to happen now? Like, is Paul going to get out of his jammies? Like, where are we going to be in a week's time with this?
Well, Paul, and again, we shouldn't be flipping about his health, remains in St Andrews Hospital in Ipswich, suffering from ill health. But there is very much an ongoing CCC investigation. They will want to talk to the former mayor about exactly his side of events, what he knew about this cash, where he believes it comes from. And then also they will chat to Sam DiCarlo about these alleged links to a Chinese gambling debt. And he'll need the paperwork to be able to verify all these claims. It's not enough just to say, oh, this is for a legal settlement, all is good. He needs the documentation to prove that this happened, or else they will continue to look more closely and charges could perhaps be forthcoming.
Joel Dry from Channel 9 News. It's a bizarre story. Thanks for the update, mate.
You're welcome.
Marto, Ed and Robbins, Sports All In.
Bit going on in sport. Obviously, the Socceroos last night with Saudi Arabia. We've already spoken about Saudis' decision to not respect a minute's silence for people that were murdered. That's just disgusting.
You know what I hate?
You, Robin.
Sitting here on a Friday morning and having already won down, there was one game of rugby league last night.
No, it's
and
great
I went
Thursday
the Sharks.
Night.
Yeah, but I went the Sharks. I hate that because there was no
you're tipping.
Hey.
So you deserve that. Anyone who tips, Robin, anyone who tips the Sharks deserves everything they get.
Yeah, right.
Now, I want to talk to you, Marto, because the Wallabies are playing and there's a very interesting... It's always nice when a Queensland Red's going to make their debut for the Wallabies, a situation that you yourself have lived. And Carmichael Hunt is going to make his debut for the Wallabies.
Be careful with this. 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, okay? So it's not nighttime rugby. 3 o'clock and they're playing the Flying Fijians. So she'll be spectacular.
Okay, where?
In Melbourne.
And is it on the telly?
It'll be on the telly. It'll be on Fox. It'll be on Channel 10.
Okay.
So keep an eye on that. Hey, Ed, the thing is, he's making his debut 30 years of age. It's not a bad effort. It's quite incredible that someone go, right, I will give this young bloke a go. He's 30, finally having a go. Because you think if anyone doesn't know Carmichael Hunt, started with the Broncos, 17, did he play State of Origin 17. At 18 or 19?
I think he was slightly older than that, but he certainly started at the Bronx at 17, yep.
If anyone, I'm looking dead at Robin and explaining the Carmichael Hunt.
I know, come on.
And then he went to the Suns.
I'm still with you.
We broke it here on this show one day because a mate of mine was his lawyer, and the day everyone said, what are you talking about? Carmichael Hunt's going to sign with the Suns, and fair enough, at 10 o'clock that morning. He went down there. He had to change his whole body shape and everything.
That's AFL.
AFL, the Suns. Right,
so he's gone from
Suns.
Rugby league
Don't make
to
me
AFL.
Show you my bum.
No, stop it. Rugby league to AFL, and now he's going to rugby union.
He went to rugby union 3 years ago and he got caught up. Remember, there was a bit of cocaine stench about. He got
very
caught
early.
Up with the Titans, Sunsy, Mad Monday.
I do remember that.
That was early on when he came. The Reds said, look who we've got, Carmichael Hunt. And he started rugby as cocaine Carmichael sort of thing. You know, and everyone went, oh, you're a grub and la la la. But he's overcome that. It's taken him three years to overcome that perception and to put all his weight back on, and he's actually played wonderfully well.
Can I ask a question? What is it about him that means that he could go through all those three codes?
I don't know. He loved a challenge. It's about the journey.
No, but if...
Israel Folau's done the same thing. So there's two guys in the Australian
backline.
Why are they
so... There must be so... What is it about them?
They've proven that it's possible to play all three codes if you've got enough skills.
And Carmichael was actually okay at AFL. He was not out of place
Israel
on the field.
And
he must be good if he's going to play for the Wallabies.
But he's playing inside centre. He's actually a fullback. Keep an eye on that one. But I'm really happy for him because he's been on our show a few times and he's a
nice fella.
He's changed his life and done it well.
He's done extremely well. And of course, all right, Brisbane Lions, you re-signed Josh Shackey again. And we're putting that down to one thing,
what?
Dan Merritt. When Josh Shackey moved to Queensland and everyone said he's going to go back to Victoria the first chance he get, he lived with Dan Merritt and his beautiful wife. They cooked him dinner. They gave him a bed. And that's why he's going to stay at the Brisbane Lions. So if
is that good?
It's great. He's a very promising
forward.
But
they're losing.
Doesn't matter. If you see Big Dan Merritt on the street, maybe just give him a couple of bucks and say, I know you're retired, but you're doing a great job.
You know what
Queensland.
He's doing, though, don't you? He's the kicking and catching coach for the Broncos now, Dan Merritt. And their cross-field kicking has been wonderful this year.
There you go. If
you but see I tell Dan you what, Merritt they got today, rid of Ben Hunt, didn't they?
That is the thing. I think we're going to catch up with Gordon Tallis a bit later, see what he thinks about them
anything
dropping
else?
Ben Hunt.
He's barely made a line. Well, yes, he's barely made a line break. So why would you want Ben Hunt in the team?
I'm still with you. So are we done?
Yeah, well done, Rob.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so it's in today's paper, but Queensland's largest super fund, QSuper, have revealed that Queensland men are on track to have more enjoyable retirements than women because the gap between how much money they'll have. And on average, they reckon that men will retire with about $388,000, while women will retire with $263,000. But here's the thing that I found really interesting about all of that, because sadly that whole gap has been around for a while, is that they're saying that the retirement, people are talking about retiring between the ages of 56 and 70. Now, I certainly know when I was growing up that my dad and my mum to that extent had it in their heads that, you know, they get to 55 when you're a woman and 60 when you're a bloke. You walk out of the office, you say, thanks for coming, you get a nice watch and you go and do, you know, nothing. You retire. And everyone was working towards that premise.
Weren't they? You're right.
I don't think, and I'm curious just to ask all of us in the studio and then you guys on 133353, like, what is your idea about retiring? Because I don't want to retire. I love what I do. I reckon I'll do it till the day I drop.
What do you do?
Well, exactly. I talk to you.
Same thing as us, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mata, you're an interesting case because you've got sort of two things going at once. You've got your media thing where you're a media princess, but then when you leave, when you take off your tiara, you go home and you work, you build things.
See,
yeah,
you don't
and
consider
I'll do that.
This a job,
well, see,
do
I don't
you?
Have any super. I don't consider this a job, no. I consider what I do in the afternoons, messing around, fixing things for people or doing work at my own house. I consider that my job, and that's what I'll do. Like
you
someone will get
pottering.
Onto me soon and go, listen, we've had enough of you, move you on. This is, and I don't have any super either. And I don't have any life insurance. All I have is a lot of debts. I will have to work forever. I've told you.
No, you've got a grow house.
Of course. So I'll just work forever. Can I give you a story about my old man? I'll give you a retirement story.
Go on.
He retired. He got some disappointment. Missed out on the top job at the Golden Circle when he was 55 and said, well, stuff you. So I've been here for 36 years. Retired. He then thought retirement was about playing golf, play golf every day, and then he'd come home to lunch. And mum, if she wasn't working, would be at home. And she rang me after 3 months. He played golf every day for 3 months. He thought that was retirement. She said, can you get rid of this human? Can he work on it? So he worked for me for the next...
I'm not ready for him to be around. That
for the
wasn't
next
part
12
of the
years,
deal.
He came and worked on the building site.
Could he build? Himself. Was he
yeah,
a
he was wow. handy, but he was as good as any carpenter by the end. The worst thing was, then he took over and he sort of became the boss just without telling me. He just became the boss. It was wicked.
So, what about you, Ed? Because you're kind of younger. You're just starting your family now. Do you? Yeah. What do you think about the whole concept of retirement?
Do you think about it yet?
Yeah, I think about sort of trying to have things in place for if and when, but I don't think I'm like you, Robin. I don't think if I can not retire, I won't. Things will change. Obviously, work changes, but I don't think I'd ever want to retire. I witnessed someone in my family retire, and they just lost purpose. They just retired too early. They lost purpose, and then it was like, well, there was no reason really to retire. I mean, you just keep going.
Why? I reckon you get retired. Anyone else think that? It's when somebody says, we don't need you anymore, and you can't find another job. That's... retirement.
And I think it's really tough for blokes particularly because with women often we know what it's like to walk away from a job when you have babies and then you have to come back in and you have to reestablish yourself. But you know what it feels like to not have that structure around you. You know what it feels like to kind of be ignored. But if he's worked his entire life and then walks away, that would be a really tough thing to cope with when you're late 50s, early 60s. Anyway, I would love to know, when do you call it quits? What's your plans?
What are your retirement plans? Maybe your plan is to never retire. Maybe you're one of these people that's got a year in their mind. When I turn, I'm going to stop.
I'm off to Thailand.
I'm off to Thailand. I'm off to Thailand to really show people how it's done. Brett from Logan Lee. Now, you're talking about retirement. Your dad, is it still working? How old is he?
My dad's 72, nearly 73 years old.
What's he do?
Mate, he does everything. We have a hire company. He has about 400 staff, but his first year of a morning on the forklift at 6 o'clock, he's last to leave.
Of course he loves it.
he loves it.
All of his friends are. He loves it. He loves it, mate. All of his mates are at work.
Another great call. It's about being social. Men can get isolated when they stop working.
Yes.
You know what they're like. And they just
sit alone
themselves.
In their shed. And
yep.
That's great what call. The men sheds are about, aren't they, in the
getting
community?
Them together.
Getting them together. Hey, Paul of Cleveland, tell us about your retirement plans. When do you call it quits?
Well, I think it's on the individual. I think everyone has a different drive and a different set of passions in them. And I think it's when you sort of wake up in that day and you realise that you just don't love what you're doing anymore. I think that's when it's time to get out, you know. And I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's everyone has, you know, uh-huh. Everyone has a different story in life, how they got to where they are. And I just think sometimes, you know, when it's enough, it's a bit like when you retire from football yeah. or things like that. You just know it's time.
Yep. You don't feel like it anymore.
Do you
well, what's
go
your
and...
plan, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your plan? Paul, what's your plan then?
Oh, I don't have any idea yet, mate. I've still got to pay off some kids' schooling and stuff like that. So I think that's another factor is, like Marlo said, when you've got debts, you've got to service them. So that's part of the drive of why you've got to get out of bed and get to work. But, you know, if we're all debt-free, and that'd be interesting to see if we all actually want to go to work, you know. And
that's true
passion.
Need versus call. Passion. Good one, mate.
Yeah, retirement. We're talking about that. Marta, you've said that, you know, you don't regard this as a proper job, which is fair enough, and you'll just go and build things.
Well, when I get out of here, I'll just keep building, I guess so, and then do an older bloke. I eventually would like to trim it down to 4 days a week, 3 days a week, and just pottering around, you know, helping on building sites. I don't know. Is that possible?
I don't know. You'll make it happen. I'm sure you will. Anthony of Ipswich, tell us, what do you reckon? When will you call it quits?
Well, I think for me, it's a combination of financial ability and motivation. So, and I think the other thing for me is a lot of blokes define who they are by their careers.
Yeah.
So finding something else outside of that that defines you as a person.
Hobby?
Yeah, hobbies, community, giving back, something like that. Something that gets you up and about.
But motivation.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so true. See, I'd love to just travel around the world, but someone has to pay for that.
Mm. I mean, who's going to look after your kids?
Okay, excuse me, but they're not going to live there when they're 30.
You're going to send them a postcard,
note,
eh?
No, yeah, note to boys. Hello.
Sunny Acapulco, just a postcard that says, cook some dinner for your younger brother.
No, I'm not doing it now. We're talking about when I finish, like in 10 years' time when, you know, Pipey's 22. Like, Jesus, man, I'm not going to be there when my kids are in their 30s and living at home. That is not happening.
That sounds like a travel blog to me, Cavalier.
Oh, my Lord. And that's what we need because we don't have any of those. Finally.
Marto, Ed and Robin, the new Triple M.
Now on Triple M, we're checking in with Gordy Tallis. Tell us. Everyone loves
Tellus. Gordy's a man who always questions whether Wayne Bennett has made the right decision. Has he done the right thing with Ben Hunt, Gordy?
Oh, look, I'm not too sure. If I had to have a yes or no answer, I would say no. Ben Hunt only played 8 games this year out of the 13. He missed 5. And he said that he's out of form. Well, the game against the Warriors, he played without Andrew McCulloch, Darius Board and Milford. So he had a brand new spine, Marto, which is, you know, that's the buzzword in rugby league, because if you don't have a good spine, well, you don't win the competition. And when they went to the grand final, Ben Hunt was our best player. By so far, it wasn't funny. He had an amazing year and he got the Broncos to the grand final. So
Gordy, good. 1 second. Yeah. Hold on. Oh, Robin's eyes are spinning. Hooker, halfback, 5/8 and fullback. They're the 4 main players, the spine of your team.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Gordy.
A bit like a human, Robin. If you don't have a good spine, you've got really bad posture.
Thanks, Gordy. I was all good with the spine analogy. I just didn't have any idea how it related to rugby league. But
let's keep going. The props are your feet. The second rowers are your legs. The locks like your bum.
Okay.
The wingers are your fingers and the centre.
Do you see these eyes?
Maybe wingers are like earrings and watches, sort of. You don't really need them.
Accessories. It's just
if you want to get there and look good every day.
I'm all for that.
Hey, now, Gordy, this is Wayne Bennett saying, this is spite, isn't it? This is him saying, you chose to go somewhere else. Well, then now you can sit on the bench and get stuffed.
You can go to Ipswich.
Look, he did it to Justin Hodges. Justin Hodges signed with the Roosters of Miami way back in the 2000. He did it, and he brought in a young guy by the name of Brent Tate, and Brent Tate had an amazing career. Obviously, when he's doing it with, you know, he's saying that Nickarima is going to be the number 7 next year and the combination with Milf. So yes, he's got a reason why he's doing it, but there's still a competition to be won this year. And maybe it puts everybody in the team on notice. So, Ben Hunt had a couple of quiet games, but he did come back from, you know, missing five weeks and didn't have all the troops. And it was a tough game against the Roosters where they got beaten on the bell. So, you know, it's a tough decision, but Wayne always makes them.
Hey, Gordy, how are you going with your tipping? Because Mardo's already none for one.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Mate, Melbourne Storm, the Sharks have had the wood on them, obviously, the last three games they played. They won the grand final. They went down there in Melbourne, beat them in Melbourne in a really spiteful clash. And this is turning into a hatred. You know, we've got the rivalry between the Broncos and the Cowboys, and that's a respectful one. But this one between Cronulla and Melbourne is more a hatred, which I love. But absolutely. Cooper Cronk pulls out.
Yeah, that's why I didn't tip him, because Cronk wasn't there. But right. Then Cam Smith played like a genius.
Yes. Yes, so, and then they just, you know, and every time you think Melbourne Storm can't do something, every time you write them off and you think that they're gone, they just come back and they prove you wrong. And it was a really good game of footy, and I was really happy with Billy's energy around there, and Valentine Holmes sort of put his hand up. And Cameron had... and I wouldn't say a bad night at the office, but it wasn't the Cameron Smith that we knew in second half of State of Origin, but it was good to see him back.
Must be tired. Hey, Gordy Tallis, big weekend of league. We'll hear you on the Ems. We'll see you on Fox Sports.
Yes, tonight. Yeah, tonight, I think it's South versus the Broncos at Suncorp Stadium, I'll be calling it.
Hey, Gordy, right. Are you home at the moment or are you away?
I'm in Sydney. Robin, I worked and I'm about to head to the airport. I'm on a 9 o'clock flight.
Your front lawn's looking a bit dry, mate. Throw
You're
some
brown,
water on
isn't it?
I went past yesterday.
Pop up, mate, those pop up sprinklers. Have you broke them?
No. I just noticed it needs a bit more.
See, he's not offering to help. I'll just add that.
No, I just go past sometimes. Cheers, mate.
See you, Gordy.
Awkward end.
Cheers, guys.